More bad news for the troubled Eureka Garden housing project. Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, download the WJCT app and listen to shows anytime, or stream the audio right now on our Facebook page as well. Just ahead, the latest news involving the troubled Eureka Garden Complex. We want your calls about this long-running problem in Jacksonville. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a look at the battle over Enterprise, Florida. Plus, it's Credit Education Month. Good news for credit card holders. Your scores may be going up soon. We'll explain all of that ahead. But first this hour, another failing grade for the troubled Eureka Garden Project. The federally subsidized Westside housing complex has garnered plenty of negative headlines over the years for its deplorable housing conditions, mold among them. This week, we learned that Eureka Garden has failed its most recent federal inspection. Now, the apartment complex owner is actually in default on its federal contract, and if the apartments fail a re-inspection, the federal government could take over ownership. The long-running saga of Eureka Garden and its tenants' terrible situation has generated outrage not only from the tenants but also public officials like Mayor Curry and Senator Marco Rubio. They've demanded improvements. In fact, the problems at Eureka Garden have led to a Senate hearing and even changes in federal law. Andrew Pantazzi of the Florida Times Union is covering the story and has this latest news. He joins us now in studio. Andrew, good to see you.
Good to see you.
And here's our question to callers. This is by far from the first time we've talked about Eureka Garden on this program. What are your thoughts and comments? As we learned this week, they've failed another inspection, and improvements that tenants have long been hoping for have not yet quite materialized. Get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, email your questions to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInjax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And so you report in the TU this week, the Westside Complex just missed a passing score of 60. They scored a 59. And why did they not pass?
So it's a lot of the same things. We haven't actually, or at least I have not yet gotten a copy of the report. The report doesn't become public yet. So we have the first three introduction pages that are a HUD official blasting the owners and saying that the same problems are continuing. But the actual problems that come up, that report won't be made public until the owners had 60 days to review potentially appeal the report, which they have said they will do.
Global Ministries Foundation currently owns these 400 apartments. They're based in Tennessee. And when the head of that company appeared on this program a year or two ago, he just took a slew of angry calls from listeners calling him a slumlord, saying, how can you call yourself a Christian ministry when you allow people to live in these bad conditions? He defended their record, saying it's a lot harder to turn these properties around than people realize. But let's explain why the conditions there are so bad, Andrew, for people that aren't familiar with this.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, Eureka Garden is an apartment complex, like you said, with 400 units. It's on the west side. It's just two blocks away from Murray Hill, past Casa Avenue, over near the Krispy Kreme near there. And it has been there for decades. And this isn't a problem that happened overnight. I mean, that's something that the Reverend Richard Hamlet, who owns the property, has pointed out many times. However, at this point, he's owned the property for years. And now there have been years that he has known that there are massive problems there because the city has shown a light on it, as well as our local politicians, as well as Senator Rubio. And he continues to seem to not accept responsibility for that. Yesterday, his statement that he gave out was again blaming decades of neglect, and he was blaming the city officials in the past. I responded by asking, this score is the lowest yet you have gotten. Each score you have gotten has been lower than the earlier one, which indicates the conditions are not improving. How is that the fault of previous owners? And he did not have a comment for that question.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, what do you think should be done to fix Eureka Garden, the troubled Westside HUD complex? It's been a scandal in this city for years. 549-2937, as we want your questions and comments. The problems at Eureka Garden are really sort of the poster child for what can go wrong at a HUD complex. They've, as you reported in the paper this week, they've led to Senate hearings, even changes in the law. What sort of change has Eureka Garden brought about in federal statutes?
So Senator Rubio last year proposed four different amendments to a basic law. So it wasn't as if he proposed a new law, but he was doing this just through some amendments. Three of those passed. And it affected basically the oversight of these properties. It gave HUD some more power to more aggressively enforce its regulations against owners. One of the amendments did. And then there were two others that just sort of changed this process a little bit to make the inspections a little stronger.
And the tenants have spoken out and complained. This has been going on for some time about unsafe stairwells, litter, mold, just poorly ventilated apartment units, just really unacceptable living conditions for a human being.
Yeah, so I should say I've toured apartments at each of the complexes they own in Jacksonville. They own about 850 apartments in Jacksonville. And Eureka Garden is not the worst that they own. It's not the worst in the city. But what Eureka Garden's residents did is they organized. They unionized a tenants association that was able to speak up and speak loudly in their own voice, calling and mailing the mayor and their representatives. And this is an example where sending a letter was effective. A lot of times people think sending a letter to your elected official is not going to do anything. In this case, the mayor responded with hundreds of inspectors. This was more than a year ago, about a year and a half ago, in September of 2015. Just a horde of city inspectors came out to Eureka Garden and they inspected 165 apartments. That's how many people gave them permission to come in. In every single apartment, they found violations. And in 163 of the 165 apartments, they found violations that were caused by the owner, not by the tenant. So that's everything from leaking pipes, moldy walls, moldy bathtubs. And then one of the more shocking ones is these are gas units that are heated up by gas and have gas appliances. And there were residents during that period of time that the city was inspecting them who required medical attention because of the way that the management company had, for example, turned off gas and turned it back on without lighting a pilot light. And a lot of the residents of Eureka Garden are older. In particular, they're older women. And so some of those older women started to faint because of the gas poisoning.
Yeah, truly horrifying. And, you know, to be clear, Andrew, Eureka Garden gets a lot of the publicity, but it's not the only housing complex in Jacksonville by any means where people are living in these kinds of conditions. That's something that I think we really need to explain and stress. This is a systemic issue for a lot of folks in this community.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Eureka Garden, I will also say, though, does have some of the most apartments because it has 400 units. That's not normal. These multifamily housing projects are not usually quite that big. Washington Heights, for example, is the next largest that Global Ministries owns. It's 200 units. And I would say Washington Heights is in worse condition, having been to a lot of those apartments. But no, that's true that many apartment complexes like this. It's one of the reasons why we saw, in particular in the 90s, a push away from these big multifamily housing projects where you had hundreds of units all together to what's more like scatter site housing. We saw more emphasis on public housing that's integrated into a community rather than a community of just federally subsidized housing.
Yeah.
The idea of like getting them working with the local neighborhood.
Two changes to talk about recently. About a year or two ago, a tenants group formed at Eureka Garden to try to improve conditions. Also, another company, Millennia Companies of Ohio, they're taking this property over by the end of the year. So what do we know about those two changes?
Yeah. So I don't know exactly what you're referring to with the Tenants Association other than the one that had initially started. But Millennia is the company in Ohio that is attempting to buy the property right now. They're in what's called the due diligence stage. So that's – I mean, that's the basic business term for they're trying to get their financing. They're trying to get all their ducks in a row and to take over the property. In the meantime, they've already started managing the property as of last month. And so I spoke to them yesterday as well about this new score, and they agreed. They're basically saying, yeah, there's some major problems at the apartment complex we want to change, and they're promising a wholesale rehab, a wholesale renovation. They say this is what they do on a national scale. They buy bad properties, and then they give them a lot of investment, and they say it'll be a lot more than what the previous owner gave to bring them up to safe and living conditions.
All right, let's go to your calls now. What are your thoughts and comments about news that the federally subsidized Eureka Garden on the west side has failed inspection again? 549-2937. Eric on the south side. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
One of the things that bothers me is every time they show Eureka Garden to one of these other apartments, granted, they're not the most elegant places to live, but most of the people out of there are either living subsidized or for free. And it doesn't seem like they can even pick up after themselves. They whine about mold in the tubs, or the kitchens are dirty, or there's trash laying outside in the hallways. But none of them seem to lift a finger to take care of it themselves. I mean, if I don't clean my house, it's going to look just like that. And it gets a little frustrating as a taxpayer to see people sitting around whining about the free place to live isn't good enough for them.
What'd you say your name was?
It's Eric.
Eric, so I will say it's not true to say that they do not pay for their apartments. They are all subsidized, but actually most of them are paying money because most of them do have some form of income, even if, for example, the elderly residents, it might be Social Security, but they do have some form of income that they are putting forward and that they are paying for the rent. So I just wanted to clarify that first of all. And then a lot of the residents will tell you that they try their very best to clean these toilets, and then the toilets clog. And I don't know if you've ever had a clogged toilet. Now, imagine having that every day and how difficult that is to keep clean. And they say that they would complain to the management company, and just days would pass and days would pass, and there was no urgency on actually fixing those problems. And then there are other things. I mean, when you think of mold in a bathroom, a lot of times the way you have a shower, if the shower head is pouring water, and then the way the tile is, it won't let the water escape, and it's pooling in the corner of your bathtub, it's going to keep making more mold and more mold. And that's going to be a consistent problem, even if you're cleaning it on a weekly, regular basis. So I just wanted to say that as some explanations that residents would give for why the conditions are so bad. And all that to say that residents have a right to be messy in their living room. I mean, if they want to have their clothes.
And to be clear, and Eric, I appreciate the call. Thanks for that question. But this goes beyond just mess. This is really about like unsafe living conditions mm-hmm. that are the owner's responsibility.
Yeah, and that's
these are problems that the average tenant really they don't have the equipment or the wherewithal to fix on their own, right?
And that's why I think when the city initially inspected this in September of 2015, they tried to identify problems that were attributable to the owner versus the tenant.
Mm-hmm.
Because
And was anything on the tenants?
So in two of the 165 apartments, they found problems that they attributed just to the tenants.
Okay.
And when a landlord has problems that they can cite to a tenant, they can evict that tenant. So the tenant, when they bring this to the city, is pretty confident that this is a problem that is the owner's responsibility.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in as we speak with the Times Union's Andrew Pantazzi about his story this week in the Times Union, looking at the latest news out of the West Side Eureka Gardens, they've failed another federal inspection. Should the feds take this property over? Unsafe and deplorable living conditions for the tenants have been a scandal for many years in Jacksonville. What do you think? It's 549-2937. John is along I-95 right now. Hi, John.
Good morning. Quick question. We're talking about federally funded projects. There's some leverage there. Sounds like there's political will to address this. It's almost a human rights issue when it gets this bad. What I'm a little fuzzy on is the city's responsibility as far as a minimum housing standard. And they worked as hard to enforce that at Eureka Gardens as they would any other housing complex across the city?
So that's actually a really interesting question. A few months ago, my colleague and I, Chris Hong at the TU, wrote about something that had changed with city code enforcement, in which specifically they said because of their new close relationship with HUD that they were no longer basically going to be enforcing code at HUD-subsidized apartments, that instead they would be referring those complaints over to the local HUD field office to look into. It faced a lawsuit. I'm not sure where that lawsuit stands right now, but the basis of the lawsuit, which was filed by some lawyers at Jacksonville Area Legal Aid, was that the city code is a higher standard than the federal REAC inspection. That's the Real Estate Assessment Center inspection, because it's basically city laws that can be everything from roaches to other things that maybe are not federally required to not be there. And the city defended their position, saying that we want to rely on our new relationship with HUD because there are so many apartments that they can better handle the situation.
Well, we saw Mayor Curry tour the complex and express outrage. We saw Senator Marco Rubio after his presidential bid ended, and he seemed to be recommitting to his position as a senator. We saw him tour Eureka Garden and demand change. But here, I mean, this is they are not the first politicians to take camera crews through Eureka Garden and express outrage and demand change. And yet here you are reporting on this again.
It definitely feels a little bit like deja vu, or the story that doesn't go away, because for these people who are living there, it's, I mean, even under the best circumstances, to make these kind of changes would take time. And I would argue that these have not been the best circumstances, that change has not been fast coming for the residents. I think it will continue to face political pressure. I think that the new administration, Secretary Carson at HUD, for example, is likely paying attention to the fact that Senator Rubio, as well as Senator Nelson, are so closely monitoring the situation. And I think that will lead to more federal attention. The inspection that happened, for example, was not like a standard inspection. Standard inspections for HUD, they get contractors to come in and to look. The people who inspected this time, these are the alpha elite. These are the Navy team, Navy SEALs who are coming in, who are inspecting. These are the best of the best that they brought in, and they brought those people in because of the political attention on Eureka Garden. Had Senator Rubio and Mayor Curry and Senator Nelson, as well as former Representative Brown and now Representative Lawson, not kept the highlight on the apartment complex, I do not think you would see that level of inspection of the apartment complex. It's worth noting, just before the city did its inspection in September of 2015, the federal government had hired contractors who did an inspection, and they gave it a passing score of, it was something like 85, and then immediately they had to re-inspect it because they realized that was not a proper inspection. It had broke some of the rules. And so I think you see there some of the problems with the way the federal government does its inspections in the first place. But when they brought in the top inspectors, they saw problem after problem piling up at these apartments.
Comments on our Facebook page from Brian. To your knowledge, is there a problem around the country with foundations contracted to provide this type of housing? From Jimmy, it's time to close down places like Eureka. More Section 8 vouchers are needed for low-income housing. Concentrating poverty in certain apartment complexes compounds the negative outcomes for residents. So can we expect then a new direction with HUD under the new HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson? And what about this listener's comment that this is this a problem nationwide? And it is.
I do think it's a problem nationwide. Specifically, the questioner's asking about if it's a problem for nonprofit foundations like this, and I really don't know. I've gone through the tax paperwork of Global Ministries, and it's a bit surprising to see a nonprofit where the pastor makes $500,000 a year and employs many of his family members and gives them pretty incredible salaries as well. So I don't know if there are other foundations like that. I would like to say it would surprise me, but at this point, I don't know that it would be that surprising. As for moving towards Section 8 vouchers, this is something a lot of people like to talk about. If we move away from the multifamily housing project, give people a voucher and you can go anywhere in the city. There are a couple of issues still with that. One is the Section 8 voucher often can't afford to move into certain neighborhoods. So some people argue that it furthers segregation because they can only go into majority black neighborhoods. So unless you increase the voucher amount, that can lead to a problem. And the other is only certain types of landlords will accept Section 8 vouchers. And so that might mean they are paying inflated costs for certain apartments. But all that to say, we know what the problem is right now under the current system with what's called a housing assistance payment contract, a HAP contract for an apartment complex, which is what Eureka Garden and Washington Heights have. And there's clearly problems when you're dealing directly with the landlord as the federal government. So there are a lot of proposed solutions, and all of them have their own things you can point out holes in. So
there's no magic bullet, in other words.
No, there's no magic bullet to the affordable housing issues that the country is going through.
Meanwhile, you can read this story on Jacksonville.com for the latest on Eureka Garden. He's Andrew Pantazzi, reporter with the Florida Times-Union. Thank you.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead later, why the local firm Nazan Court is promoting ethical fashion. Ethical fashion. We'll tell you about their style tour coming to a college campus near you. But up next, the latest in the battle over Enterprise, Florida. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, living with the immigration crackdown. President Trump's new enforcement efforts are affecting millions of lives, including citizens. When undocumented immigrants slip deeper into the shadows, that affects school attendance, law enforcement, even Cinco de Mayo. How are we dealing with all this? That's next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, Governor Rick Scott stopped by Jacksonville's Harbinger Signs Factory on Monday with his economic entourage in tow. The governor is touring the state and lambasting lawmakers for voting to dissolve Florida's economic development agency, Enterprise Florida. The sponsor of that measure is the First Coast's own State Representative Paul Renner, and many local colleagues are supporting him. Now, Department of Economic Opportunity Director Sissy Proctor was with Scott at his Fighting for Florida Jobs roundtable. WJCT's Ryan Beck sat down with Proctor to talk about whether research shows these types of business subsidies offer a return on investment. Take a listen.
A lot of this is wrapped up in politics right now. And so to start off, I really want to begin by steering away from that and just talking about what business incentives are and sort of the research behind them. So can you tell us concisely how Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida sort of fit into DEO's overall mission?
Absolutely. So we know that it's very important that we have strong and steady economic development in our state, and that we have diversification of businesses all across this area of the state and south all the way down to Miami and over to Pensacola. So we know that a diverse economy is a strong economy. And at the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity, we are able to focus on supporting those missions of the economic development and of the diversification through strong economic, community, and workforce development. And to accomplish that mission, we also have to rely heavily on our partners. And several of our partners are the folks that you just talked about. So Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida are two of our very strong partners. Enterprise Florida is on the front end of economic development for our state, looking at and focusing on diversifying our economy, bringing businesses to our state, working with businesses to expand in our state and also grow here organically in our state. Also focus on international development and trade, as well as marketing our state as the best place in Florida to do business and to bring your business.
There's a lot of research over the years nationally, and then in each state has their own kind of research into how effective these incentives are. And to be fair, some of it is pretty mixed. You know, what comes to mind is the right-leaning Mercatus Institute at George Mason University. They've been very critical of business incentives as a whole, but even specifically here in Florida. And they've done studies that they say point to small state recoup of investment dollars, and that oftentimes these companies may be already planning to relocate here and just, you know, got money for it. Now, obviously, there's a lot of opposition, aggressive opposition in the House right now, and that's sort of the information that they're working with. Does the opposition have a point when it comes to this research?
So here's what we know, and we know this because we talk to businesses every day. I get out to communities as often as I can and talk to community leaders, business leaders, economic development organizations, county and city officials, and chambers of commerce, every type of organization that you could think of that supports and is part of the network of economic development that has been created over the last 20 years in our state. And they say, and they know, that economic development has to be strategic. It has to and requires a lot of investment. And if we are going to be strategic and make investments in our state and investments in growing our economy, incentives are a part of that, especially for highly competitive deals where a company is sitting in another state or another country and saying, where can we locate? They do not have to come to Florida, many of these deals. A lot of the deals that come to the state because of they have a market here and they need to be here, those are not the types of deals that we do incentives for.
There are other studies that have pointed to mixed reviews when it comes to the types of jobs that are created. So I just want to kind of get an idea from you, from DEO's perspective, is there clear data about the wages that these jobs carry, the benefits, and how do they compare from jobs that we may have lost during the economic recession?
So Florida was hit by the recession, early. It was hit very hard and it lasted a long time. And so what we knew as a state was necessary was to diversify the economy. And so working with Enterprise Florida and working with, a handful of other stakeholders, including the colleges and others, came up with a list of industries that we wanted to target to say, if we're going to diversify our economy, how are we going to do it? And so on the list include things like manufacturing. Manufacturing helps diversify our economy, and we know it provides high-skill, high-wage jobs. So a lot of the manufacturing that's happening all across the state, including in this area and Jacksonville area, is high-tech manufacturing. So you're talking about manufacturing, for instance, related to aeronautical manufacturing, aerospace manufacturing, manufacturing related to the healthcare industry. These are high skilled jobs that do require a lot of training. And so what we know is the wages associated with manufacturing are not low wage jobs. Those are high wage jobs. So that's one of the industries we target. We also target, you know, the financial industry, which is strong here in Jacksonville as well. And so this is a lot of the banking industry, which are also high-wage jobs.
Worthy to mention that this may be the most aggressive that lawmakers have been on repealing these types of programs, but it's certainly not the first time that this kind of talk has happened. If we look at the fight over film incentives that were recently repealed, you know, starting a few years ago. And, you know, people are still filming their movies and their shows here. And there is some data that comes from nonpartisan sources here within the state. A 2012 study commissioned by the Office of Economic and Demographic Research said for every $5 in film incentives that the state gave away, they received revenue around $2. OPAGA says it was 43 cents for each dollar. And so this sort of makes the argument in a way for people like our Palm Coast Representative Paul Renner, who sponsored these bills, that, look, we have some nonpartisan research here that shows that maybe the state isn't getting that much back.
The return on investment for the film credits, there wasn't a strong return on those investments at all. A lot of times it was difficult to even find a one-to-one. But the investments that we make in businesses are strong investments. We're looking at long-term capital investment. We are looking at long-term commitments for job creation and long-term commitments for paying wages to folks who live in Florida. And the return on investment that we see, we know it's strong because we measure it. Before we do a deal, we determine and make sure that there is a positive return on investment for the deals that we do. And we understand that, for instance, when somebody, you know, commits to making 100 jobs, and if those jobs are going to pay $65,000 a year, the folks who get those jobs are going to spend their money in their local community, and that has that magnifies across the community.
The counter argument to that is always that the biggest companies, the biggest corporations, are the ones that most benefit, not necessarily the small mom and pop businesses that sprout here in Florida, but these larger banks. And you think of like a big company like Amazon that comes down here, and they are the ones that are really reaping in the benefits of these incentives.
So what we know is we have to have a strong toolkit. So that's everything from the Small Business Development Center network that works with businesses every day to understand and help them understand how to, you know, get access to capital, what the timing is associated with them getting that capital, how to navigate local, federal, state regulations, how to put together a business plan, to the assistance that Enterprise Florida provides in the international trade. If a company wants to export between the SBDC network and Enterprise Florida, we help small businesses every single day learn and understand and move into the international markets. To some of our incentive programs that are built for smaller companies, to the large, highly competitive, massive job creation deals that we do.
How else do you think you can convince the public, you know, not just lawmakers, but the public, that these programs are worthwhile? Because after all, you know, they elected these representatives. And in some cases, maybe these representatives are doing exactly what they wanted them to do when they voted for them.
It is the outreach that we can provide to talk to folks so they understand how important it is that they reach out to their legislators, that they talk to their community leaders about what's important to them.
And that was our own Ryan Banks speaking with Sissy Proctor, head of Florida's Department of Economic Opportunity. Still to come, ethical fashion will tell you all about that emerging concept and why there might be good news this month for your credit report. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, New Yorker staff writer Jane Mayer talks about Robert Mercer, the hedge fund tycoon who has become a major force behind the Trump presidency. The libertarian Mercer family spent millions funding Breitbart News and other conservative causes and played a critical role in bringing Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway into the leadership of the Trump campaign. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Remember white nationalist Richard Spencer, the guy who got punched on camera at the inauguration? Well, it turns out his money comes from cotton plantations, subsidized by the federal government.
I'm not a hypocrite in this sense, and I don't know what to say.
Next time on Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Well, the Wall Street Journal recently reported that all three major U.S. personal credit monitoring firms are going to do something important. They're going to remove tax liens and civil judgments from credit reports. That's a move that could improve credit scores for up to 12 million Americans. Since March is Credit Education Month, we thought it'd be a good time to talk about what this update means for consumers and what you can expect in the next few months when it comes to your credit score, and also how to improve your credit score, which we can all work on. Jerry Sexton is CEO of Jack's Federal Credit Union, and she's here with more. Jerry, good to see you.
Well, good to see you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks for being with us. So this is major news. Beginning July 1st, the three major credit reporting firms, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, are going to remove tax lien and civil judgment information from credit reports. That's a big change and a big deal for a lot of Americans, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. It is. And many Americans are going to see an improvement in their score, probably about 20 points.
20 points? That's 20 a big jump.
Well, it's a big jump, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's going to all of a sudden make you a prime borrower if you were a subprime borrower. But there are conditions to have those tax liens and judgments removed, and that is that they have to match on the name, address, Social Security number, or date of birth. Mm-hmm. If they can't match on that, then that information needs to be removed.
Mm-hmm. And why did they decide to make this change?
Well, it's been for many, many years, consumers have questioned the accuracy of their credit reports. And it is one of the initiatives of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, to improve that for the average consumer. And they have several initiatives to improve the accuracy, the quality control, make it easier for the consumers to dispute information. And this is just one of them.
Right. Now, how is the credit industry responding to this update?
Well, as a creditor in Jacksonville, it is something mm-hmm. that's on our radar, we'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to, a tax lien or a judgment is usually an indicator that someone is a higher risk and is more likely to default should you loan them additional money. So we're going to be going through and making sure that our information is accurate that's on the bureaus.
And that's something that I know as CEO of Jack's Federal Credit Union, you want to encourage everyone to do. Check your credit score, that's one, and look for ways to improve your credit score. How can people go about doing those two things?
Well, it's very easy, actually. You can get a free credit report each year from each of the three major credit bureaus. And you can do that by getting going to your credit free credit report.
AnnualCreditReport.com.
Sorry about that. AnnualCreditReport.com. We urge you to get that credit report and take a serious look at it. If you identify something on there that is not yours, dispute it. If you feel that you've made your payments and that creditor is reporting you as not having made the payments, dispute it. And you can dispute it directly to the bureau. And then what you want to do is be sure to follow up. Give it about 30 days and make sure, and then follow up to make sure that that's been removed from the bureau.
And people can easily monitor their credit over time, set alerts so that they are on the lookout for identity theft, anything that could ding their credit score.
Oh, most definitely. Watch the credit alerts are great. They'll let you know if someone's pulled your credit for the next 90 days. Also, you can get that at annualcreditreport.com. But the best thing to do is once a year, just pull those reports and take a look. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you really want to be aware of is how you use credit. Things like if you go to the mall and decide you're going to apply for 5 different credit cards that day, thinking that that's going to help your score, in all likely it's going to cause it to fall.
Yeah.
So you want to be very careful how you apply for credit and how you use it.
Obviously, paying off your balance, paying on time, helps your score. What else can help boost a score?
As I mentioned earlier, it's utilization is important. You know, how much of the line, credit line you have used, the number of payments, and also it's a ratio of the number of payments, the good payments to the number of payments that you've missed. So everybody, many people do get in trouble and they may miss a payment that, you know, it is what it is. It's happened. But over time, the number of good payments that you have will improve your credit score. So timely payments are important. Credit utilization is important. And only open new lines if you really need them.
Jack's Federal Credit Union operates in all 5 counties of our listening area. And contrary to what some might believe, it's not limited to military or federal employees.
Exactly. We are open to anyone who lives, works, or worships in the 5 counties of the Jacksonville MSA, and we'd love to have you.
She is Jerry Section, CEO of Jack's Federal Credit Union. Get your credit scores up, check them. And good news, if you had a tax lien or civil judgment, that's going to be removed from your credit report beginning this summer. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
NAFTA is all about lowering trade barriers, right? Well, tequila for all my friends.
It's easy. It's very easy. Tequila for the U.S. is whatever Mexico says tequila is. You just tell the U.S. I'm going to bring this tequila. Here's my label. The approval is in 10 days.
I'm Kai Rizdal, NAFTA, and a tequila chaser. Next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, Chris Thiele here, inviting you to tune in this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the Town Hall in New York City. Our guests include Marcus Mumford, Corinne Bailey-Ray, and Trevor Noah, plus the Royal Academy of Radio Actors will offer their usual bit of hilarity. The First Call Radio Players are in the house, along with Gabby Moreno, and yes, staff critic Bertrand Falstaff-Heine will join us, and we hope that you do too.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, they believe that fashion can be a vehicle for social change. Through storytelling art and purchasing power, the Style Tour is spreading these ideas like preventing pollution, strengthening the economy, and bringing an end to fashion's dark side. Yeah, the cycle of poverty and the unethical treatment of garment workers overseas. The Style Tour is on its first regional college tour this spring, and it's coming to our area. It's brought to you by NAS and Court Eco-Ethical Apparel. Courtney Berger is partner and designer with NAS and Court, and she's on the line. Courtney, good to see you.
Hi.
Hey.
Good to see you back.
Thanks for being on the phone with us. So the Style Tour went to University of Georgia in Athens. It's coming to Flagler College this week during St. Augustine Fashion Week, maybe coming to JU next week. What is what motivated you to create this?
Well, it wasn't enough to just create great products. People really aren't aware of how important it is to change their buying, the purchasing changes. The amount of purchasing power in the world is incredible. It can change the way that manufacturers work, the products that are made, and, you know, it can change the environment, social aspects, and also economical aspects. Like, if people were to buy Made in America more, then the money would stay in America instead of going to places like Asia, which is where most of the majority of garments are created and manufactured.
And your line, Nazan Court, you live out these values. Tell us about your line and your company.
Well, we started about 2 years ago. We're based out of Los Angeles, California. And well, we first had to explore what the idea of sustainability was. Both of us are, you know, environmental activists in our own way. And so we wanted to create a brand that, you know, lives up to our vision of how we want the world to be. So we kind of had to dive into defining sustainability for ourselves and seeing what other people thought that was for them as well.
You're also applying to be a United Nations Associated Sponsored Program because this concept fits their development goals. What would that mean for the program and for Nazan Court and the Style Tour?
Well, we've worked with the United Nations before. We were named the Future of Fashion by the United Nations Fashion Fights Poverty. And because we're doing something that is better socially, environmentally, and economically, we fit in with their goals as well as making all of those aspects better.
Now, the Style Tour, as I mentioned, is coming to Flagler College during St. Augustine Fashion Week, actually tomorrow. What's going to be happening down at Flagler tomorrow?
Well, we have our lecture series is going to involve a game. We have a small, you know, sample collection of our fashion, and we'll do a trunk show as well. But mainly we're going to discuss most of the hot topics on the environmental impacts, you know, how fashion is the second biggest polluter of water in the world. Some of our bad buying habits that have come up over the last decade. We create 400% more trash in textile waste than we did just a decade ago. So these are things that we think students would be interested in knowing, and especially implementing into their lives as they become, you know, parts of the society and also career minded themselves.
Sure. People might not realize when they're buying clothing items, if they're a little more intentional in their choices, it can have a big impact.
Yeah, we refer to those in our lecture as the seven sins of fast fashion. And some of them people have no idea that they're participating in it. You know, it's almost subconscious and motivated by media and advertisements and something that we were raised with. But we're trying to bring a certain level of awareness to that. By the time we get to the end of the seven scenes of fast fashion, people are usually feeling pretty bad. But thankfully, we have the three divine deeds, which is how you can combat those sins and make a brighter future.
And what are the three divine deeds?
Well, part of that is education. So we just implement that. You know as much as you can. You know, there are a lot of great apps out there like Good Guide or Ethical Barcode or Bicot that can tell you just by scanning your barcode on your clothing what it's made of, where it's made. Sometimes some of them have a living wage of the country that it's made in. There's also tons of other sources, Fashion Vice Poverty, Wrap, or FashionRevolution.com. These are other groups that are doing something similar to what we're doing. And then there's also Selection. So that's the second divine deed, which is really just checking what's on your back, what's on your label, you know, buying fair trade, buying less, and doing clothing swaps as well. Very important. Vintage. Yeah, and then there's activism. There's actually getting out there and making some noise and protesting, donating, writing to your government officials, things that take it one step further, creating art. You know, we just did a fashion film together that is the first sustainable wardrobe fashion film. And, you know, to get the message out there in a more active way.
Now you're yeah. So Flagler College tomorrow and possibly JU next week. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to the style tour swinging through the First Coast. Courtney Berger, partner and designer with Naz and Court, the eco-ethical apparel, rather. Courtney, thanks for getting on the line with us.
Well, thank you for having us. Naz is here with us, too.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you were there as well. Thanks for being with us.
We're in person anyway, so it's okay.
Okay. That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs our board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show, meanwhile. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, why fear of deportation has driven many undocumented immigrants further underground. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.